Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go on a Monday after the draft. This, live in Los Angeles, is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, where Colin was right, where Colin was wrong, plenty of both, plus Peter King next hour, Roy Williams, Carolina basketball coach, friend of Michael Jordan, will join us as well. Richie Incognito of the Raiders and Joy Taylor is joining me on a Monday. We got Last Dance last night, Joy, and we got a great weekend of NFL draft action. How are you?
I'm great. Awesome weekend of sports.
It really was.
Amazing.
It was a really amazing weekend. And we start with the NFL draft and one team in particular. The team all the experts are saying had a bad draft, the Green Bay Packers. I won't go that far, but I do believe the Green Bay Packers and all NFL teams, they tell you what they think of their roster. They tell you what they think the direction should be. And they tell you what they think of their quarterback. Teams will tell you what they think of their quarterback in the draft. If he's immobile, more offensive linemen. If he's got a big arm, more skill people, Kansas City. Let's be honest. Baltimore has told you what they think of Lamar Jackson. The running's better than the passing. Tight ends, running game, defense, keep scores lower. That's how we think we can win Super Bowls, as he develops as a passer. So Green Bay, and I'm not going to say they had a bad draft. I think you'll be surprised by the end of this segment who I think had an awful draft. But Green Bay did tell you what they think. Not only with their first-round pick in a good division with Minnesota did they draft a quarterback who won't play for 3 years. Not only did they draft a running back with their second pick, and then three of their next four picks were interior offensive linemen. They also did not draft a wide receiver. And what is it saying? The new coach, remember Aaron Rodgers wanted a new coach. Aaron, who's passive-aggressive and has struggled in relationships with coaches, with family. These aren't my opinions. This stuff's documented. Multiple family members, Coach McCarthy, teammates have come out, articles written. Not my opinion. This stuff's out there. He wanted a new coach, and the new coach is saying, I'm not building around Aaron. We're building around a running game. The new coach is building an offense that's going to look a lot like the San Francisco 49ers. Multiple sets, heavy reliance on running the football and setting up play action passes for Jimmy Garoppolo / Aaron Rodgers. So you bailed on the last coach and you got a new coach. And guess what? He didn't want to build around you either. Last coach was more about building around you. This guy's like, no, I'd rather you be Jimmy G than Patrick Mahomes. And you know what else Green Bay was saying by not drafting a wide receiver? 30-some wide receivers were drafted. Green Bay, everybody says they need one. You know what Green Bay's front office is saying in Matt LaFleur? Russell Wilson doesn't have anybody nearly as good as Devontae Adams. He's fine. He makes everybody better. Russell Wilson doesn't have anybody as good as Devontae Adams. And he doesn't. And he keeps getting to the playoffs every year. Carson Wentz doesn't have anybody as good as Devontae Adams. But Wentz and Russell Wilson make every tight end and every wide receiver work. Wentz last year took deck furniture and lawn chairs to the playoffs. And Green Bay's saying, no. Devontae Adams is better than anybody Carson Wentz has, anybody Russell Wilson has. And they're going to the playoffs. We got Alan Lazard. We got Marquise Valdez-Scantling, got you Devin Funchess. That's enough. That's enough. You don't need any more. Russell Wilson doesn't have anybody as good as Devontae Adams. Carson Wentz doesn't. See, this is the thing when you're passive-aggressive and don't get along with people. It's always everybody else's fault. And Green Bay said, nah, receivers are good enough. Bruh, they're good enough. Now, the interior of the offensive line, we don't think that's good enough. We're going to get you another running back. But you wanted a new coach, and you got one. And the new coach is saying you're going to be Jimmy G more than Patrick Mahomes. That's what they're saying. Because these teams tell you, and this is Matt LaFleur's fingerprints are all over this draft. Because this is the offense he likes. It's not dependent. It can win with Ryan Tannehill. It can get to a Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo. And I think it's very interesting. I mean, listen, Aaron Rodgers last year, 24th in completions, 11th in yards, 10th in touchdown passes, 12th in QBR. That's with a clever offensive coordinator, one of the better NFC running backs in Aaron Jones, Jimmy Graham, and Devontae Adams. That's not good enough. You're not Mahomes. Those days are over. Got a new coach. Numbers went down again. So it's not just they drafted Jordan Love. It's not just they went heavy on a blocking tight end. I mean, go look at their picks. Running back, blocking tight end, interior lineman. They don't think Aaron can match up in the fireworks shows, and they don't trust him. It's not about that. We're not going to win that way. We don't think we can win that way. We think Matt LaFleur and the GM think we can win pounding the football. Go 49ers. That's what their draft said. A blocking tight end, a running back, and three interior offensive linemen. And no wide receiver. They tell you what they think in these drafts, and Green Bay told you what they think of their quarterback. Injuries, getting a little older. He's not Mahomes. Let's run the football more. Play action pass, better than dropping back to pass. Pretty obvious what they're saying. And that's with a new coach that's supposed to be pro-Aaron. Okay, let me shift to this. I think draft grades are ridiculous. Last year, all the experts gave the Raiders the worst draft grade. They had the best draft. But media people are mostly followers, so since your rival does it and your coworker does it, you do it. I don't, and I haven't for a long time. If you just want to go on just, you know, draft picks and you want to try to guess if fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh round guys and undrafted free agents are going to hit, be my guest. But the accuracy on that is absurdly low. No, what I try to do every year on this Monday is I take your free agent acquisitions. That means guys already in the league. I know what they can do and what they can't. And your top 2 to 3 draft picks. Because the hit rate is much higher in a first, second, and an early third round pick than a fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. Even the GMs I like and I talk to are like, you know, late fourth round, you're crossing your fingers. After that, who knows? So there's four teams I consider off season as one big grade. Your free agents, who'd you lose, who'd you gain, and what did you get in your first few picks? And there's four teams to me that get an A. Tampa Bay is the first. Tom Brady, yeah, I'd say that's an upgrade at quarterback. Then I thought they got the best offensive lineman at the best spot, 13, Tristan Wirfs. Then they get a starting safety and a running back from the SEC. Maybe you've noticed those guys usually work in this league. This offense is better today. Brady, Gronk, a starting safety, a starting right tackle, and probably a starting or a backup running back. Tampa Bay gets an A. Secondly, Denver Broncos. I thought they had a great offseason. A.J. Bouye at corner, fantastic. Jarrell Casey, an underrated and productive defensive lineman, fantastic. Melvin Gordon, fantastic. And they went and got two really talented wide receivers, including my favorite, Jerry Jeudy, and they got a starting center out of LSU and a starting corner out of Iowa potentially. Denver had a massive offseason. Very good offseason. 4 to 5 new starters. If Drew Lock can play at all, this is a really interesting football team next year. I'll give another A to the Indianapolis Colts. I thought they nailed it. Free agency, DeForest Buckner will be their best defensive lineman. They get Phillip Rivers only for a year, but a much better fit with that offensive line than the previous quarterback. Then, I don't think I've ever met a GM who I knew wanted two star players in the second round and got both of them. Jonathan Taylor now with Marlon Mack is an A-plus backfield. Jonathan Taylor's feet and speed are A-plus-plus. And then Michael Pittman, who he had targeted. Ballard texted me 6 months ago on Michael Pittman. They also went and got a guy that'll start at safety from Utah and their future quarterback in Jacob Eason. It won't start next year, but in two or three. Big arm guy who needed an O-line. He's a perfect fit. That's an A. And the final A, the Cleveland Browns. I thought they had a great offseason. They got a starting right tackle in Jack Conklin. They got another weapon for Baker Mayfield and Austin Hooper. And then I thought they got the best offensive lineman in Jedrick Wills from Alabama, a starting safety potentially, and a couple of defensive players. I thought the Cleveland Browns solved every dilemma they had. Right tackle, left tackle, they need another safety, and what do you know? Another weapon from Baker. So the four teams to me, big picture, that get A's. Tampa Bay, Denver, Colts, Browns. Those are A's. I'm not going to sit here and guess what your six rounders are going to do. Who knows? Half those guys don't make the team. Everybody, Minnesota gets an A. And how do you know what five, six, seven round guys are going to do? I don't. Last year, everybody said the Raiders draft was terrible. It was fantastic. Now to the one lousy draft. People sometimes are afraid to say this, but they need to. Belichick's lousy at the draft. Patriots get an F. Patriots draft? Just say it. Seven different graders gave the Belichick Patriots a B. You didn't watch any of those guys outside of the Michigan Wolverine players even play. So let me ask you, is the league becoming a playmaker league? I think it's fair to say, who won the Super Bowl? Kansas City.
Yeah.
San Francisco, Kansas City had some playmakers. New England has no playmakers. All their picks, they didn't get a single playmaker. They didn't get offensively faster. Aren't they one of the slowest offenses? They lost Tom Brady. Their answer was not drafting a quarterback, getting Brian Hoyer. You tell me. This is a franchise. Mel Kiper gave nobody worse than a C. Pro Football Focus only banged on one team. Why can't we just say it? New England doesn't draft well. They don't. The draft, they got Tom Brady in. That was the great draft, right? The other nine picks in that draft couldn't play. They got a guy named Jeff Marriott. He vanished. He was positionless. He's the Kaiser Soze of draft picks. Nobody knows where he went. He literally had no position. I looked it up this morning. I looked up his NFL career. It's like he never existed. They had nine other picks outside of Brady. None could play. Why did Tom Brady leave? They don't have weapons. They didn't get one in the draft. I thought it was really cool that Belichick had his dog sitting at a table. Awesome. Fun optics. I don't care. They lost their kicker. A star kicker. They went cheap on a kicker. They lost two very productive linebackers. A Hall of Fame quarterback. The only thing they signed in the free agent period was Marquise Lee, a wide receiver that can't stay healthy. Just say it. They don't draft well. They haven't had a Pro Bowler on offense drafted since Gronk. He's now out of the city and a 1 year from being out of the league. This is why Brady left. They can't get weapons. You look at their draft pick. It's a bunch of defensive guys that will disappear into Belichick's system. Where did they get athletic offensively? Because now they got Jared Stidham. He's not exactly Lamar Jackson. He's not exactly Russell Wilson. He's not exactly Patrick Mahomes. He's not exactly Aaron Rodgers, Carson Wentz. He's not Matt Ryan, Jared Goff. I don't think he's Matt Stafford. You got him no weapons. So just say it. They're not good at the draft thing. Great businesses have holes. I thought New England's draft stunk. God, we really need some dynamic playmakers. You know, because Kansas City's got 11 of them. Let's not address it.
Okay. Yeah, great. Super duper.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
We had two more episodes of the 10-part documentary, Last Dance. By the way, I interviewed the documentarian, Jason Hare, over the weekend. A really, really smart guy. Fascinating story about this. My two takeaways last night, and I've got more later, but number one is it's really important. This documentary is giving us a life lesson for all you 20-year-olds out there. Success is hard. Michael Jordan's the greatest basketball player of my life, right? First or second, right? 6 years of being tackled to finally win a championship. Three losses, playoff losses, to the Pistons alone. Phil Jackson was his, what, fourth coach? few years ago, maybe a decade ago, they had this thing in New York called Occupy Wall Street, where a bunch of 20-year-old Wake and Bakers got together, sat in tents, and were upset they weren't getting rich. You're 24. You're 24. Nobody in those big buildings is 24 getting rich. It's 50 and 40 and 60, and it's hard. This documentary shows you how hard it is to be great. Michael Jordan, handsome, talented, relentless. God, it's like Andy Dufresne in Shawshank Redemption. He had to climb through a tunnel just to finally get a championship. Oh, my God. I have so much respect for how hard Michael worked. I mean, I lived through it, but you watch it and you're like, God, the guy was a tackling dummy for 6 years. And the second thing is, God, Phil Jackson's a great coach. I mean, you talk about when I was a kid, they used to have this thing. It was called the Wide World of Sports. As a crazy thing, and they used to have, you know, people jumping over barrels and weird sports. And they used to have these people in, like, Asia that could spin plates, like, 7 at a time, 8 at a time. You'd be like, oh, my God, how you did that? That's Phil Jackson. You got Dennis Rodman wanting to do an in-season bender in Vegas. You got Jerry Krause basically hanging him out to dry, saying, you're done at the end of the year. You have Michael Jordan dealing with this incredible pressure. It's all over the team. You have Scottie Pippen kind of injured and sort of pouting that he's not getting what he wants financially. And here is this coach spinning all these plates. I mean, Greg Popovich is a great coach. His team unraveled a couple years ago because one guy got hurt, Kawhi Leonard. It unraveled. The Lakers with LeBron, it started unraveling last year when a rumor got out they were going to trade young players. Just rumors. Phil Jackson is spinning plates. You get Rodman's in Vegas with Carmen Electra during the season, and Michael's pressure, and Pippen's pouting, and Jerry Krause is all over Phil Jackson and hanging him out to dry, and he's just spinning these plates. He connects with Rodman through Native American culture. That was a fascinating story. Sometimes I don't so my two takeaways are A, success is hard as hell, and B, Phil Jackson, tip of the cap to Phil. The ultimate Zen master balancing all these plates blew me away.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Philadelphia is getting poor draft grades because they took Jalen Hurts in the second round, a backup quarterback. And I think sometimes we forget the value of quarterbacks. Jimmy Johnson, Hall of Fame coach, who was the first guy to really engineer major trades in the NFL. People didn't trade players like they do now until Jimmy Johnson came out and made a sweeping, massive franchise-altering move with the Dallas Cowboys. And Jimmy Johnson talked about backup quarterbacks Friday in the Herd.
One thing that hasn't changed, Bill Belichick was on my boat a few years ago, and we were talking about the players, and I said, with these rule changes, I said, you know, I've always said, you know, the quarterback is the guy. I said, you know, but you know who the second most important guy is? He said, no. Yeah. I said, you know, the second most important guy is your backup quarterback. So it goes quarterback, quarterback. It is a quarterback-driven league.
Think about this. Carson Wentz is really talented. He hasn't finished the last three seasons. He got hurt in last year's playoff game. He has not thrown the last pass for the Philadelphia Eagles in the last 3 years. By the way, since Carson Wentz, who I like, who I think is worth the money, I like him. Carson Wentz, since he was drafted, the Philadelphia Eagles have been in 6 playoff games, including a Super Bowl. Carson Wentz, in those 6 games, has completed 1 pass. He's thrown 4 because he's never available. Jalen Hurts will play this year. Jalen Hurts will play and has a style a little bit like, as an athlete, a move-around style, can move the pocket. They like to do that. Doug Peterson is a very clever schematic coach. He, you know, Sean Payton loves Taysom Hill. He can play around. And Doug Peterson comes from the Andy Reid tree where they move the pocket and they play around. And, you know, they're big jumbo sets. Of course it makes sense. I mean, it makes perfect sense to go get a quarterback. Carson Wentz is never available at the end of years. And, I mean, don't kid yourself. Why does Baltimore have RG3 backing up Lamar Jackson? You know, the Jets got heat this weekend because they drafted a kid named James Morgan, a quarterback, instead of taking more players. James Morgan is a poor man, Sam Darnold. He plays like him. He is very athletic, a big risk taker, can run around, and like Darnold, throw some really bad picks. So if Sam Darnold gets hurt, you've got a guy that plays a little bit like his style, and you can keep much of the playbook. Last year, Darnold got mono, and they had unathletic quarterbacks backing him up that didn't fit the system. Jalen Hurts, you can run a lot of that offense. Running game, move the pocket, roll out, quarterback draws, bootleg it. You can do that with Jalen Hurts. So I thought he would get drafted third round. In fact, I said it on this show to Baltimore. I said, that's a good fit. And also, Philadelphia, is a team. They don't have a ton of openings. You saw the Chargers this weekend. You know, the Chargers gave up a bunch of picks to get a linebacker from Oklahoma at the end of the first round. Why? Because they don't have seven guys that can in this draft that can make their roster. So I thought what Philadelphia did made perfect sense. It's why RG3 is in Baltimore. It's why the Jets went out and got a guy that looks a little bit like Sam Darnold. And, you know, we get caught up on this. Oh, but there was a linebacker available. Folks, let's say they take a linebacker from Wisconsin. He's not worth half a point. If Jalen Hurts is rushed into duty twice next year, you think he's worth a point? He'll be taking 60 snaps. You don't think he's worth a point? So if you're just talking about what's a player's value, now even Jordan Love, who's much more of a project than Jalen Hurts, but you get why they took Jordan Love. But Jalen Hurts is not Jordan Love. Jalen Hurts could play tomorrow in the NFL. I'm not saying he'd be good, but he's gone through an Alabama system. Then he went to an Oklahoma system. This kid has seen two different offensive systems. The Oklahoma system has some pro stuff in it. So I get it. I don't think it was terrible. I totally get what they're doing. Philadelphia is not the kind of team that could have drafted 12 guys. They're not Miami. They're not Cincinnati. They don't have all these spots available. Miami needs draft picks. I mean, Miami, they may get seven starters out of the draft. Forget just guys make the roster. They may get seven starters out of the draft. I mean, I was watching everybody like Baltimore's draft, and I like, after their first pick, are we sure any of these guys are going to play? Baltimore's just got too many players.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, here we go. Make a lot of opinions and have a lot of opinions, and some are dubious, some are more spot on, and here we go. Colin right, Colin wrong.
Where Colin was right?
A month ago when certain reporters at the other place were saying there'll be blood in the streets. The optics of having the draft, and I said, settle down on all the hyperbolic nonsense. America needs a weekend of hope and optimism, and 55 million people watch this, 32% increase. Anything you can do in sports over the phone or on a Zoom or on a – do it. Too much hyperbolic optic concern by reporters in the media. What happens to the media when they get overly dramatic? They get less accurate. This was a great weekend for kids all over America who now are millionaires or will be very soon. I thought the NFL did a great job handling it. It was just nothing but good, 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 good. And the hyperventilating a month ago was silly. Again, you go to Twitter, it's not the real world. 22% of the country is on it, 6% use it a lot, and it's mostly people with no life that want attention.
Where Colin was wrong.
The Green Bay Packers did not draft a wide receiver. If there were two areas I was sure they were going to draft, it is offensive line. They went heavy on that and wide receiver. 36 wide receivers were drafted. I didn't necessarily... You know, first of all, I thought they'd pick one in the first round, but they have a history of doing very well in later rounds. They're a pretty good draft team through the years, and they didn't go and get one. So regardless of what I think about Jordan Love being picked, and I did say about a month ago, I said, you know, Jordan Love could make some sense. Not getting a wide receiver by the Packers was one of the few draft shocks I think there were.
Where Colin was right.
I said Tua would go to the Miami Dolphins and Herbert would go to the L.A. Chargers in my mock draft. I thought the Chargers would move up, but I just thought Tua, if you look at the history with Drew Brees, this is an organization that has a lot of draft capital in Miami this year and next year. They could not afford to pass despite the medical concerns on Tua. He's a transcendent talent. I think he's going to be terrific, but even if he doesn't, even if he isn't great. And 3 years later, they bail on him. He gives them marketing. He gives them juice. He gives them a direction. He gives them optimism. And Herbert, that was always my gut feeling that the Chargers, they didn't tell me this. Believe me, I poked and prodded. Snoop bought coffee and dinners. But Herbert, to me, felt like as a West Coast team, a big strong-arm kid that can move, felt like the right fit.
Where Colin was wrong.
I've been very critical of Dave Gettleman of the New York Giants. I think they had a really good offseason. I think they did a really good job this weekend. Their top four draft picks, three of them I've seen play a lot. Andrew Thomas, the tackle at Georgia, Xavier McKinney, the safety at Alabama, and Darnay Holmes, the corner for UCLA, and I think they all start. I also think they did a good job to get James Bradbury, the corner from Carolina in free agency, and Blake Martinez, the linebacker from Green Bay. Those guys are highly, highly productive players. And so I may bang on Dave Gettleman, but Daniel Jones looks a lot better than I thought. And I thought the Giants had a terrific offseason, productive free agents, and a bunch of college guys I walked that I think come in. I think three of their four picks start. Tip of the cap to Gettleman. I thought he had a great weekend.
Where Colin was right?
New England. Didn't draft a quarterback. It's interesting. Did not draft a quarterback. I keep telling you, next year, they're going after a quarterback unless you believe Jarrett Stidham is the future. I do not. Also, I've been on this for a long time. As great as Belichick is, I think he is a below-average drafter because in January, he tells his scouts to get lost. He takes it over. This weekend, none of us would deny they do not have enough dynamic offensive weapons. They didn't draft a single dynamic offensive weapon. You have to go back to 6 years ago when they did really well in a draft offensively, and that was for Jimmy Garoppolo, who's no longer there. I think, once again, they show they're not good at offensive players. Maybe the line they are, but tight ends, receivers, their hit rate on quarterbacks isn't much. Running backs, they're average.
Where Colin was wrong.
Shocked. Not much shocked me this weekend. Detroit Lions did not move the number three pick. Matt Patricia went 9-22-1. They need players. By the way, Minnesota got better this weekend. Green Bay solidified the interior offensive line and running game. Detroit just got a couple good players. I don't get it. That was the pick to me. I understood if the Giants didn't move, if one of the teams that wanted a quarterback moved up. I got it. But I don't get it. Did Detroit get paralyzed because they didn't get the perfect trade thing? To me, if you like Jeff Okuda, you could have moved down two spots. If Miami would have given you a third-round pick, just move down two spots, get another pick, and get Jeff Okuda. I just didn't get it by the Lions. I missed.
Where Colin was right.
The SEC is college football. Can we stop arguing? 15 first-round picks, 63 total. LSU had more players drafted in the first round than the entire Pac-12. In 2020, let me describe what college football is to you. The SEC, Clemson, and Ohio State. That's it. Oklahoma's close. I don't know why we argue this. If you take Oklahoma out of the Big 12, it's not even the same conference. If you take Ohio State out of the Big 10, it doesn't even look like the same conference. You can even take Alabama last year out of the SEC. They still win the national championship.
Where Colin was wrong.
Henry Ruggs was the first wide receiver taken. So I love Jerry Jeudy. He wasn't even the first Alabama wide receiver taken. I think Henry Ruggs has some bust potential. He doesn't like physical play. You know, with Jeudy getting double teamed, he had a lot of single coverage. What's his route tree? He's a burner, and I get why people like him, but I never thought that Jerry Jeudy would go behind Henry Ruggs because I think Jerry Judy's going to walk into the NFL for Denver and just crush it. I think he's a rare once-every-couple-of-year wide receiver talent. I was surprised by that.
Where Colin was right.
Jameis Winston got picked up before Cam Newton. Listen, Winston has his issues, but he's a baby. What is he, like 26, 27-year-old kid? And he's healthy. I don't think I'd build my team around Jameis Winston, but my proclamation was always, oh, he's going to get picked up before Cam Newton. Cam Newton's a star, but nobody wants to have a star backup. Jameis Winston is a productive, mistake-prone quarterback, but he's not a star. You can bring Jameis Winston in for 2 years to any franchise in the NFL. Not going to get in the way. He's going to work hard. He's healthy. He's a big kid. He's actually very productive. I've seen Jameis Winston do things, and he appears willing to be coached. He doesn't appear to be terribly distracted. But as we predicted, he would get picked up on that market before Cam Newton.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
My next guest, it really is like a legend. He's the only coach in the history of college basketball that's won over 400 games at two schools. 15 years, Kansas, one of the top two or three programs, now at Carolina, which I think has the most rabid fan base in the country, the best uniforms. And Roy Williams is the head coach there for 17 years, three titles. By the way, 2017, I think, was his most impressive title. If you just looked at the team and the it was so different than most, you know, star-studded college teams I grew up with. Roy Williams is joining us. So I'm tickled watching this whole Last Dance thing. And you were an assistant under the legend Dean Smith. And you know, so much, Roy, is mythology that, you know, Michael was cut. And Michael just, you know, he barely was a high school player. I remember when I first was introduced to Michael, he was like a McDonald's All-American high school player. So I didn't hear, you know, but you know, it's a better story to say he was no good in high school. So let's go back, Roy. You're a pretty good judge of talent. The first time you spotted Michael Jordan was when?
It's crazy, Colin. I'm glad to be with you. But, yeah, you watched The Last Dance and all those things that you forget about the first part of it. He was not a bad high school player. He just didn't make the varsity as a sophomore.
Right.
They kept him on the JV team. But no, I can remember like it was yesterday. I was an assistant to Coach Smith. Eddie Fogler was one of the assistants. Coach Bill Guthridge was one of the assistants. He was my coach on the freshman team 100 years ago. We had our camp going on, and we had Eddie Fogler and I had called around the state and tried to get the best players we could to come to our camp. And we said, now the bad news is you got to pay because we don't let anybody come free. You can't do that. But on Sunday afternoon, the first week that Michael was in camp, I was opening up Carmichael Auditorium at that time, and kids were coming down and playing pickup. And a counselor would bring over about 30 kids at a time and then take them back. Another counselor would show up. So you had them for about 20 minutes because every kid was not going to get to play in Carmichael, and that was our home arena at that time. So we were trying to let the little kids get a chance to be in there as well. And so he came over, and I thought, wow. And I told him, I said, I want you to stay with the next group. And I told his counselor to take that group back. And so Michael stayed a second 20-minute period, and then he went back to the dorm. And, Colin, it was hot. It was June in North Carolina. That's like a mile walk. And then all of a sudden, two groups later, he shows up again. And he said, no, I just love to play. And so we kept him down there. And I'm not joking whatsoever. I told Eddie Fogler that night, I think I just saw the best 6'4" high school player I've ever seen.
Wow.
And I gave him a ride back to the dorm, didn't make him walk back in the sun.
You know, what's interesting about this, Roy, and why I think this is so important? Because it's showing young people today how hard success is. That he grew. He had a growth spurt, which, you know, a lot of boys do. Girls stop growing about 12, 13. Boys can pop at 16 or 17. Anthony Davis did that. So then you get Michael at Carolina. And much like high school, Roy, he was good, but he popped there, right? Like, he got significantly better in college.
Well, his freshman year, he was fantastic, quote, for a freshman. But we had James Worthy and Sam Perkins, so the load wasn't on him. But his freshman year, he was fantastic. We had the confidence in him. I'll never forget, as he's walking out of the huddle in New Orleans with 31 seconds to play, Coach Smith slapped him on the back and said, if you get the shot, knock it in. I mean, he's the game winner, won the national championship. And what people never even know, that year, as in all of our teams and still my teams, we give out awards after each game. We grade the tape. Now, it used to be called grade the film. Every player on every play, offensive and defensive. And Michael Jordan was the defensive player of the game in the Georgetown game also.
Wow.
So he was a big-time player. But his freshman year, the day before practice started, I always got everybody's height, the reaching height, the vertical jump, and then we went outside and we did the 40-yard dash. and I timed every one of them for 10 years. The same spot on the wall that they stood there to measure them, I had seen the jump against the wall, so it's always going to be a little lower than somebody's going to say they have an 88-inch vertical jump or all that crap because they're jumping against a wall, so it's not going to be quite as much. But Michael's vertical jump was really good, but he was 6'4 and a half. The next year on October 14th, I measured same wall, same standard. He was 6'6 and 40-yard dash time, and I'm not going to remember it exactly right now, but his freshman year, he was really athletic and fast. He was like a 4'5", okay? Right. And I'll never forget this. His sophomore year, ran the 40-yard, me and Coach Guthridge and our trainer, Mark Carnes. We all three had hand stopwatches, so we're not professional timers by any means. But he crossed the line, and I looked, and I said, wow, Coach Guthridge, what'd you get? And he looked at me, and then Mark Davis said, I got 4.39. And Coach Guthridge said, I got 4.38. And I said, I did too. And so I waited a couple of days. I said, Michael, we missed your start. We made a mistake here. Come on, I need you to run it again. And he said, oh, too fast for you, huh? I'll never forget that. And he goes back to the line and runs it again. And all of us got below 4.4 as a sophomore. So he went from 6'4 and a half to 6'6 and got faster. And, you know, I mean, he got stronger, and he didn't, as the episodes last night even said something about it, he didn't really buy into the weight program. We were just starting at that time. But he didn't buy into that, until he got in the NBA. But you're right. It shows kids, people, that guys can get better. They can get bigger. They can get stronger. And that's what he did. And it's this thing, I mean, I watched it, never took my eyes off of it. Last Sunday night, and I know what was going on at that time. I was close, and I followed them closely, to say the least, and went to see playoff games, and I watched it last night, and I was not in a single episode, and I was even more excited about watching it. I mean, ESPN is saying, thank the Lord, my ratings are doing real well now compared.
You know, Roy Williams joining us. You know, Roy, and I have said this, I have nothing against the G League. But I have said this time and again, I think the NBA is making a mistake. The only reason I know who Zion is college basketball. And I worry about taking a kid away from Roy Williams, Mark Few, Jim Boeheim, Mike Krzyzewski, Bill Self, taking a kid away from that and throwing him into the Fort Wayne Mad Ants against a coach who may do a fine job, but he's not you. Let's go back to Michael. I was blown away, Roy, by his polish, his refinement after 3 years at Carolina, because he was asked almost halfway into his rookie year, you may be the face of the league, young man. I think college basketball and Dean and you really helped refine him. So go back to when he showed up on campus and when he left. How did he change as a man, as a human being, in your opinion?
In every way possible. And I'm telling you, great mom and great dad, it was a family, and they were so good with him. They came to every game, and you know, it was a little less than two and a half hour drive from where their home was. You see there in every game, but they did such a great job with him. But yet, one of the cutest things on the whole deal, the first, when his mom reads the letter about him, you know, I need some stamps. And you know, I've always said, Colin, that there's no perfect rule. LeBron did not make a bad decision. Kobe did not make a bad decision. Right. But there are a bunch of guys that did. I don't know that college has ever hurt anyone. Some kids have more interest in the academic side and getting a college education, having a college experience. So there's no perfect rule for everyone. But, you know, what's going on in the G League now sort of makes you shrug and shake your head a little bit. I mean, the NBA has always had the greatest farm system in the world in college basketball and didn't have to invest any money.
Right.
And, you know, so it sort of makes me shake my head a little bit. But, you know, some people think it's progress, some people don't, but it's the world we live in. But he was the most driven person I've ever known, the most focused I've ever known, the greatest competitor I've ever known. And think about this, is last night when I'm watching Tulsa, about, you know, Collins, Doug gave me the ball, put it in my hands, and now Phil Jackson comes in, he wants to take it out.
Yeah.
But he looked at it and believed in it and gave it a chance and says, okay, I'll change. And, you know, in today's generation, I don't know that you could find guys that would do that thing. in my own opinion, I don't think you could at all. But it shows how badly that young man wanted to win and still does on the golf course. I mean, it's still the same way. But, no, I've really enjoyed it. And like I say, I lived it from a distance. I was involved from a distance. I knew what was going on. I came to games. I talked to him. Had him to come and work, you know, speak at my camp those first couple of years. Played golf with him several times. But still, I'm just sitting there and I'm trying to do some other things, but I put the pencil down in 30 seconds before the commercial's over with because I don't want to miss anything.
Yeah, it's just so amazing. You know, they used to joke when Michael was scoring 60 in the NBA, they'd say, you know, the only guy that could hold him under 20 points was Dean Smith, and it was kind of a funny line. But the truth
is...
Yeah,
it sort of pissed me off, to be truthful, and it still does. And my wife hates me to use that word, but, I mean, first of all, there was no clock in college basketball. Secondly, they could double team, triple team. And thirdly, Michael was a unselfish player. And the biggest thing of all, hey, we still freaking won games.
Well, you also had, back then, you had four NBA players on the floor. So it was.
Yeah, and his sophomore year, he did average 20, but nobody wants to admit that. It's just a cute line for everybody to say.
Do you think, Roy, when you look back at it, is that your ability to make him play in Carolina's system is why he bought into Phil? Because he went back and thought, wait a minute, I've played in a system that wasn't totally dependent on me, and we won a championship that in the end, your history with him allowed him to go, okay, I've got an experience playing in a strong coach-driven system. Oh, wait, we won 90% of our games that way. Have you ever seen it from that end of the telescope?
No, I never have, because I think, you know, and Coach Smith, I think, is the best there ever was, and he was even better off the court than he was on, but he got Michael to buy into our team doing well, and he would still do okay. I tell my guys, I said, the teams that win, and I wish it was more eloquent and a better way to say it, but I say, the teams that win, their players get the awards and rewards, and Michael's only award and reward he wanted was to win.
Yeah.
And I think you have to congratulate him. He said, okay, and using your thought process there, he said, hey, I did some things here, and we won. But he was so intelligent on the basketball court. And, I mean, I loved it last night when he did say that Doug wanted the ball in my hands, Phil wanted to take it out. But then he said, hey, PAX is open. And, you know, so he started believing, and he was trusting. He didn't start anybody on the bad end. He gave you a chance.
Yeah.
And I think he's done that with everybody. And with each success, he trusted you more. But he was so intelligent. And it's I mean, I love the – I'm going to watch it every Sunday night. And I guarantee people are bound to get tired of watching the 1981 this or the 2001 Celtics versus the Miami. You know, now all of a sudden this is something that people are changing their schedules to watch on Sunday night, and I really believe that.
By the way, Fox Sports did a bracket for the best fans in college basketball. 2.5 million votes were cast, and Carolina won.
I voted 7,000 times myself. No, I did not know that fact. I think I might have to use that in recruiting.
Yeah, no, you guys have an amazing fan base. And I wonder, because when you go back to recruiting Michael, Carolina at that time, I'm thinking back on it, it was the Big East had some swag, and Carolina to me. Was it a hard recruit? Or did you know early you had Michael?
Well, it wasn't hard because we got started so earlier than the rest of them, because he didn't blow up. In fact, Coach Smith at one time got a little mad at me because I had called his high school coach about him coming to camp. And then he's camp, and then his high school coach came and worked the camp. And we're going to get dinner late, hot dogs, and I don't drink at all, but everybody was having a beer or whatever. And his high school coach told me, said, well, he wants to go to one more camp. Should he go to Garf's five-star camp, or should he go to camp in Milledgeville, Georgia? And I said, I think he should go to Garf's camp at five-star, because the fundamental stations every morning help everyone. And so then Michael decides that's where he wants to go. And I call Garf and say, this guy's really good. Just keep your eyes on him. And then he was so good that they invited him to stay a second week and made him a waiter, cleaning up the tables at lunch and dinner and breakfast, and so didn't charge him. And at the end of that time, he was a one-on-one champion of the week, the most outstanding player of the week, the MVP of the All-Star game, the leading scorer of the week, and the fifth. There were five major awards, and he got all five. But we were way ahead at that time. But still, Michael had to make the decision, and Coach Smith talked to his parents about he will have a great opportunity, but he also talked to the parents about the education that he would get at North Carolina. And you watched it. His mom and dad were fantastic.
Oh, great.
People. And so
yeah.
For us, we were a little ahead, but that doesn't mean we weren't scared to death at the end that something could happen. But, again, I can't express fully enough how strong that family bond was, and that was important to them that he played for Coach Smith, because, you know, at that time there were only seven or eight schools in the ACC. Anyway, now there's 15. But you're right, we did have a lot of attention.
Yep.
Coach Smith had a great deal of success, and 76 had won the gold medal, and, you know, so there were some things there. But we had, luckily for us, we had just gotten a head start on most people.
Hey, it's great talking to you, Roy. I love this. This was a trip down memory lane, and I appreciate you giving our audience a glimpse behind the door. I loved your stories.
Well, Colin, I appreciate it. My son had a great thing. He said, hey, Pop, he said, all this thing about Michael is making more people think you know what the crap you're doing.
Well, send our best to your family and your son. Thanks, Roy.
All right, stay safe, Colin. Thank you very much.